Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
I don't think that we make excuses for people who do these types of crimes. I mean, they need to be ultimately held accountable for their actions. And, you know, we need to to work hard in order to get us there. It's unfortunate that someone would be so brazen to do such an act, let alone at a funeral. I mean, how low can you be of a human being to target other people at a funeral?
That's D.C. Police Chief Robert Conti today after the deadly shooting at Stewart's funeral home on Binning Road Northeast. Four people were shot. One man was killed. Police are looking for suspects. Unfortunately, deadly gun violence is nothing new in the District of Columbia. But this, a shooting at a funeral home, as the chief said, how low of a person can you be? Once again, we find ourselves talking about deadly gun violence in D.C. My guests are Sam Ford, D.C. Bureau Chief for WJLA TV7, and Sam P.K. Collins, staff writer for the Washington Informer newspaper. Also want to hear from you tonight, our listeners, about this horrific crime. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can also tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. What is the answer? What's going on in our community? Sam Collins, Sam Ford, thank you both for joining me. I appreciate your time.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Sure. Sam Ford, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Yeah, I just got back from over there.
Yeah. Go right ahead, Sam.
Yeah, as I said, it was, right there at the Stewart Funeral Home, if you know Minnesota, and Binning Road. And there was a young man. His name was Stefan Carroll, who was killed in late March, and they were having his funeral there at the Stewart Funeral Home. And the funeral was over, and the people who attended the funeral were leaving. And according to the chief, it was 12:17 p.m. when they came out of the funeral home. Somebody, a gunman or gunmen, started mowing people down and killed one man, seriously injured three other people. There was a D.C. police officer parked across the street at the time that all of this happened. And that was not a deterrent either, apparently. And he apparently proceeded to try to assist people who had been injured. But it's wild. The thought is that it's some sort of beef going on between rival groups. And so now it's to the point that they're shooting people at funerals. And while that was going on, a few minutes after the shooting at the funeral, then there was another shooting in the 4300 block of F Street Southeast, which isn't too far away. And a person was grazed by a bullet, housing unit shot up. And that was a block from where the person being funeralized was killed in March. And so police are saying it may or may not be related.
Yeah. You know, Sam Collins, the thing that really struck me today about this is we know these things do happen. And as heinous as it is, we know that there have been violence perpetrated during funeral services, not just here in D.C., but we've seen that in lots of urban communities across the country, particularly when the person whose services people are attending is a victim of violence. But I think the thing that really was problematic for me was this is Stewart's Funeral Home. This is a black institution in D.C., 123 years old. If you have lived in D.C. for any amount of time, you know Stewart's Funeral Home. My father's arrangements were there. My stepmother's arrangements. My grandfather, my grandmother. Generations of my family have used that place. And it's almost, hallowed ground, Sam, for a lot of black people in this city?
Definitely true, Harold. But at the same time, we're dealing with a generational, intergenerational breakdown in which, and mind you, I don't know the age range of the perpetrators, but you can see it among young people, whether they perpetrate crime or not. There's a divide from the old guard, and lessons about institutions and customs, traditions aren't being passed down from generation to generation like they used to, which could set the foundation for an incident like this where a neighborhood institution, a black-owned business of more than a century, is the site of a mass shooting. And that speaks to what has befallen black Washingtonians, I would say, since at least the 1970s, 1980s, with the crack offensive that has destroyed the first institution, the family, through mass incarceration and through drug addiction. So by the end of the day, it always goes back to that, speaking to your point about people having disregard for our black institutions.
Yeah. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the shooting at Seward's funeral home today. Happened around 12:17 this afternoon. Four people shot, one person killed. If you have a comment or question about the violence that's happening in D.C. that knows apparently no bounds, give us a call. Chico, quickly, calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Chico Donato here. I want to know when is they going to put bills in law for gun control? Because it's not just the funeral home. It's also the Louisville, the Louisville shooting in the bank. It's the Louisville, it's the thing in the schools. It happened at Sandy Hook. It happened in the movie theater. It's happening everywhere. And I don't like it. There's people I know that don't like it. And it needs to stop.
Yeah.
And this is not what America is about.
Yeah. Chico, thank you so much. But, you know, Sam, that's one of the things that all of us, you, Sam Ford, Sam Collins, myself, our colleagues in this business, it is the never-ending story about gun violence, the push-me-pull-you on Capitol Hill, the questions about it, even with local government. Sam, you know, Sam Ford, it looks like, again, this is more grist for the mill.
Well, yeah, one of the things that, you know, I've covered D.C. for, good Lord, 36 years, you know, on the local level. And I really don't recall a shooting at a funeral before. Now, I know that the South Capitol, I don't know if you remember the South Capitol gang, that's about 15 years ago, they shot and killed four people who were standing at South Capitol and Brandywine Street Southeast. And they had killed these people after a funeral. And that the plan was, they planned to shoot them as they left St. Augustine Church on 15th Street, but they couldn't get a van. That they were trying to rent a van. They couldn't get a van in time, so instead they shot them when they went back to the neighborhood. So, you know, it's not like it's unheard of. And, of course, I remember going up to Boston one time, and they had a shooting in a funeral, like inside, you know. So it's happened. But at the same time, you know, it's like, nothing is sacred anymore. Nothing is respectable anymore. And then, you know, I guess you go to a funeral now, you're taking your life in your own hands.
Which is an interesting point because, as we heard today, Chief Conte did say that the family of Stephon Carroll asked for police presence. He said that that is not unusual when there is
homicide.
When there's a homicide, and there was, according to what the chief said, a police car which was right on the corner. What's that? 30 steps, maybe.
40th and Benning. That's the corner.
Yeah, maybe 40 steps from the front of Stewart's funeral home, maybe less. And somebody, as we always say, Sam Collins, somebody knows something. But do we know anything about the person whose services were being held today? You know, Stephon Carroll. There are some news reports going back all the way to 2016 with somebody with the 2018 with the same name, a young person, but we don't know exactly anything about him other than the fact that he was murdered 2 weeks ago.
Definitely. I can't really speak to the history of the deceased or what he was involved in. What I will say is that people who are involved in that type of life, they have little disregard for consequences or for law enforcement. And another element that we need to look at, that actually D.C. council member Zachary Parker, who you had on recently, who he's looking at, what he's looking at right now, is the gun manufacturers. He's actually introduced legislation that's going to allow, if it's passed, that's going to allow D.C. residents and the Office of the Attorney General to sue gun manufacturers in situations where, you know, there are mass shootings that pretty much led from the illegal sale of guns, or if the gun manufacturer itself didn't do its due diligence in keeping guns out of the hands of the wrong people. So there are efforts to nip this in the bud from all angles, but in speaking with people who are Second Amendment rights enthusiasts, some of whom are black and live in D.C., they tell me that people who, you know, in the whole conversation about gun laws, people who are violating gun laws have low disregard for the law. So there is some sort of skepticism about, you know, going that route, you know, which makes it very complicated, you know, and it also goes back to the Revised Criminal Code Act. I can go on and on and on, but by the end of the day, my point being is that it's always about a disregard for the law, you know, not only among perpetrators, but I would also say among members of the gun lobby who want to make a quick buck.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about today's deadly shooting at Stewart's funeral home in Northeast
D.C. So I had a colleague.
Go right ahead, Sam.
Take a look at some stats today. You know, he had a chance to go through the police stats, and it was kind of startling. I don't know. Do you know that corner of Minnesota and Benning? I mean, you know, it's not, let's say, the safest place in the world, but I didn't realize how much was going on there. But anyway, what he looked at so far this year, this is just, you know, since January 1st, 3.5 months, there have been, last year there was one homicide, this year there have been two, last year there had been no sex assault, this year there have been one. Last year, there's a category called assault with a dangerous weapon, which could be a shooting or anything. There were six of those first 3.5 months last year, this year 9, and then robbery, 13 last year, 23 robberies in the past 3.5 months, and we're talking about within a 2-block radius of this shooting. I mean, so you think about it, crime in that area is, you know, if you would say, off the chain. But, you know, what can you say? So it didn't happen in an area, I guess, where you'd be, let's say, terribly surprised.
Yeah, but to that point, I mean, on one hand, you know, the way things are in this day and age, as it relates to just gun violence, as we've seen in Nashville, as we saw in Louisville, and as we see in D.C., you know, there are safe neighborhoods until they're not safe neighborhoods when things happen, and this happened, you know, right around the corner from the Department of Employment Services. One of those, you know, big D.C. government buildings. Again,
yeah. I guess the point is, it's getting worse.
Yeah.
That's the point I'm making. It's getting worse, significantly worse.
Yeah. And yesterday, Sam, you did ask the mayor at one of the affordable housing press conferences that she was having yesterday about you know, gun violence. Can you talk to us a little bit about what she shared?
Well, I just asked her if there's anything new, because, you know, in these categories, everything is going up. I mean, if it's homicides, if it's robberies, if it's carjackings, everything at this point a year ago, It's higher today. So I asked the mayor, is there a strategy? Is there a new strategy? Is there something new that you're looking at? Because obviously what we're doing now doesn't seem to be working. And she just said that, you know, their strategy is to get guns off the street along with the people who use guns, period. And, you know, I don't know what that means. You know, I don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
We have a lot to talk about tonight on this program. Of course, we are talking about the Stewart Funeral Home shooting on Benning Road Northeast today, where one person lost their life. This was after a funeral for a homicide victim. We're going to continue this conversation. Miss T, calling from D.C., we are going to talk to you next. Please do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise we will take as many phone calls as we can leading up to 8 o'clock at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM channel 141. And don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. As I said, if you're on the phone, stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about deadly gun violence in D.C. again. This after a shooting at Stewart's Funeral Home on Benning Road in Northeast. My guests are Sam Ford, D.C. Bureau Chief for WJLA-TV, and Sam P.K. Collins, staff writer for The Washington Informer newspaper. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at H. Fisher, W-H-U-R, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Miss T, as promised, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, just want to speak on the whole issue with the shooting.
Yeah.
Just following the whole incident. I mean, I am actually friends with the family of the person's funeral, and I just really think that because that crime was not is unanswered, they have rewards out to get, you know, people to come in or talk or find out who caused that death. And there were so many unanswered things that are still out there. So they should have had police protection at that funeral. Usually when someone is murdered, they usually try to, knowing that there's the suspects are still out there, they usually will have some type of police presence. But there weren't any. So the rewards for people...
Well, there actually was an officer there, according to the chief, in a police car.
But what did he do to stop anything?
Well, you could say that. He didn't stop the situation, and you could argue that maybe they should have had more there, but
no,
you said they had none, and I just wanted to correct that.
Standing in front of the doors of the funeral home, but sometimes they don't even want to get that close because they fear for their own lives.
Mm.
So down the block or
well, and sometimes families don't want obvious police either. You know, it makes the service uncomfortable. That idea came up as well today. But I just wanted to say there was an officer there, and as you said, he didn't stop it, no, but he was there. One other thing that I would note, too, is that as I looked around, there were a lot of cameras there. So I suspect that, you know, if these cameras are operative,
hold on, Ms. T. Hold on,
will be coming out soon.
Say that again, Sam. Ms. T, hold on, because I do want to get back to you. Sam, you were talking about the cameras?
Yes. If you look at Stewart Funeral Home, there are lots of cameras. There's a building across the street. So this is an area where there were a lot of cameras. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll probably be seeing some video of suspects soon. That's what I'm speculating. But there were a lot of cameras around there.
Mm-hmm. Ms. T, you said that you were a friend of the family. The chief said today that he believes this was a targeted shooting. You, in any conversation that you may have had with the family today, did they talk about that?
I spoke to them because I didn't attend the funeral.
I see.
Because I felt like, you know, I didn't feel comfortable.
Why not? Why didn't you feel comfortable?
You hear about situations where a crime has not been solved.
Uh-huh.
The violence of the crime, there's been on the news about where he was shot in that street, but then they found him somewhere else. You know, the street that the incident initially occurred where he was shot, but then his body was moved. So it's too much activity. My suggestion is if the mayor wants to make sea change, or if the mayor wants to get to the bottom of a lot of these crimes, all of these red light ticket money, millions and millions of dollars they're getting from people for traffic violations and all that, they used to use that money as reward money. $25,000. These young boys out here making $25,000 probably once a week selling drugs. So the life that they have been shown at such a young age on how to make street money, $25,000 is not a lot of money.
Ms. T, I was going to say, you make a really interesting point, something that I don't think a lot of people are considering.
$100,000 reward, $50,000. That's when you start seeing people coming forward, because that would make a person come forward and give up. Because all these people that are shooting at each other, they know who they are. These people know, they know, ain't no stranger shooting at you. They know who these people are, but they're not going to tell you.
Okay. Ms. T, thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate your input. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Sam Collins, one of the things that Ms. T said that I found, particularly interesting, I'm looking at the Metropolitan Police Department report on the homicide of Stephon Carroll, and the report says that the homicide occurred on Friday, March 24th in the 4400 block of East Street Southeast, but then it goes on to say around 12:25 a.m., because she was suggesting that the body had been moved. Certainly we can't speak to that, but what it does say is that when the officers arrived at the location of the crime, there was no body found at the 300 block of Anacostia Drive, and then they found a report of an unconscious person. So while we can't necessarily speak to the point about whether or not the body was moved, detectives say that Carroll was shot in the 4400 block of East Street Southeast and found in the 300 block of Anacostia Drive. But to her point, Sam Collins, she said, $25,000 is not a big enough reward.
I gotta push back against that. I don't. This is not the 80s. Or even the 90s, for that matter. I don't see too many street-level dealers or whoever, scammers, making that much money every week or as consistently. The game, as they call it, has changed. As a matter of fact, that's what a lot of the people who are in that life try to tell, Gen Zers who want to get in that life, that that the drug trade or whatever else has changed. Like, you're not getting as much money as they would have gotten back in the day. So that point that she made, no disrespect, I don't really see it being very viable. Now, to her point about increasing the reward, I'm not entirely sure that people are going to be enticed by the reward, at least those who are in those circles, because there's still a code about not snitching. Now, mind you, they might be caught up in a situation where they might feel the need to snitch, but people are really hard pressed not to snitch, if they're not caught up with, if they're not at the table making a deal for their life or whatever the case is. So, we're looking at a whole parallel universe where there are a certain set of laws where, if you're caught up in a certain kind of life and you do something, there are consequences. Not saying that I know what Stephon Carroll did. Mm-hmm. He could have been innocent in all of this.
Exactly. We don't know his history.
And, like, I don't want to speculate on that, but the point that I'm making in response to what Ms. T said is that there's a whole parallel universe in which laws don't matter. And part of the reason why that universe is winning over the law and order that the D.C. police and the mayor want to have is because the D.C. police has been pretty inconsistent in holding up its end of the bargain. When we're talking about prosecuting gun crimes, you know, statistics came out that a lot of these cases get thrown out because of Fourth Amendment violations for the most part, or because of misidentification on the part of D.C. police. So, you know, to an extent, it falls back on the police and the mayor to hold itself accountable to make sure that it can, you know, make clean arrests to pretty much, you know, make sure that the attorney general and the feds can clearly prosecute these gun crimes.
Sam, we were talking before the break about your comments to D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser on yesterday, and she said, you know, the aim is to get the guns off the street. Suffice it to say, as you said, you've been covering, you know, the city for a long time, as have I, that has been, you know, the mantra.
Yeah, that's the mantra. I hear that, my mind goes to sleep.
Yeah, I mean, we heard that since Kathy Lanier
I guess it's you have nothing else to say. That's what you say. And, you know, I don't know. But one thing she said I wanted to get back to, if I could.
Sure.
And this is what she was talking about, that these people know each other. I don't think they necessarily know each other.
Why do you say that?
Well, to go back to the South Capitol Street murders, these brothers, Sanquan and Orlando Carter, they didn't know the people they were shooting necessarily. They just knew they were friends of this guy they were angry with, right? And so they didn't care who they shot. So people coming out of the funeral at St. Augustine Church, they would have just shot him just because they were friends of his. And when they went to that corner, they just shot those people at South Capitol and Brandywine because they were friends of the guy they didn't like. And so it's interesting. Recently, I went over to Kenilworth. People over at Kenilworth are terrified because there is some kind of dispute going on between the people at Kenilworth and the people over at Mayfair. I mean, these young people, right?
Still? Mayfair Mansion, still?
Correct. There is a... And so what happens is that they told me that if you are a young male walking down the street in Kenilworth, and so this, one of these beefing people from Mayfair comes up, they'll just shoot you. It has nothing to do with who you are. We're at war with them, and if you fit a certain demographic, they'll shoot you. And so you can't walk down, they say you can't walk down the street comfortable there. So I don't think necessarily these shooters knew anybody at this funeral. They just knew that they were people who were friends of the victim, of the homicide victim. And so they decided to shoot the place up. Perhaps they knew them, but I don't think that was absolutely the case. I don't think they necessarily know these people.
Yeah. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Jeffrey, calling from Northeast D.C. Jeffrey, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I was just calling to say, as a community, we need to stand up. And if we see something, say something. All the legislation in the world is not going to help stop this gun violence. Because the people that's committing it, yeah, I mean, they're not obeying the law. The laws are only hurting legal citizens that's willing to go about it the right way to do these things. And they're not able to protect themselves because of all the legislation.
You know, that's an interesting point. Thank you so much, Jeffrey. And, you know, one of the arguments that we have heard, Sam Collins, is that the laws are for law-abiding citizens and that, the crooks and the criminals do not, obviously, abide by them. But, you know, from your perspective, you know, Sam, spring is here, and you know the warm weather is coming, and as we have seen in years past, when the weather heats up, so does crime in D.C. I wishful thinking here, but I just certainly hope that this is not what portends for D.C. in 2023 during this spring and summer.
I hope so, as well. I see the city making great strides and boosting funding for recreation, opening recreation centers a bit later. So, you know, there is some headway there. Councilmember White, as well as others, have been very adamant about, you know, pushing for that. You know, as it relates to the budget, because we are in budget season, I do see there's some discussion, you know, with the forecast, with us not making as much revenue as we used to, with about what's going to go and what's going to stay. And I see, you know, the mayor boosting, you know, funds for police salaries and whatever else the case is. But we're talking, when we talk about housing, when we talk about food insecurity and just other quality of life issues, you know, those seem to be threatened during this budget season. And when we do talk about crime, not to make excuses for those who perpetrate it, but there is a reason why we see incidences of crime on Minnesota and Bending Road more often than in other parts of the city where people are more affluent and they have more resources. When people are provided with alternatives to a life of crime, it's more likely that they won't engage in it. Not to say that that always happens to be the case, but we are coming out of a pandemic where quality of life worsened for a segment of the population, and that, you know, in turn affected how children acted up in the streets.
You know, Sam, you mentioned something when you were talking about, you know, Kenilworth and Mayfair, you know, mansions. I've not heard that term, and I guess that's kind of why I was so incredulous when you said Mayfair mansions. The last time that I've, you know, even thought about Mayfair mansions was way back in the late 1980s when our colleague Joe Johns had the confrontation with the Nation of Islam
yeah.
and their drug patrols.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, a lot of times, you know, the more things change, the more they're the same.
Exactly.
I mean, some of that has come back. And, you know, for example, like between Mayfair and Kenilworth, there's a Cesar Chavez school. I don't know if you saw the report recently. The kids came out of school and gunfire erupted. The kids had to run back into school. You know, I mean, it's going on. I didn't know about it either. They called me at Kenilworth and asked me to come over there and talk to them. And when I came over and talked to them, I just said, you know, I think the mayor's visiting these various neighborhoods of D.C. This is where she ought to go and visit these people, because these people are terrified, and they are suffering daily. If you're afraid to walk down the street in your neighborhood, you know, and that's pretty bad. If you're afraid to walk down the street in your own neighborhood, and they are.
Yeah, and here's the difficult thing. For those of us, as journalists, but we're, also invested in, our various and sundry, communities. You know, Sam Collins, what is a possible answer? Is there a secret sauce? The police chief wants more police officers. That's difficult because D.C. is competing with Fairfax and Montgomery County and Prince George's and other points, outside of those areas for, police officers. We often hear about holistic ways to address violence in our communities. Baltimore is, for example, we know they're going to be instituting, the mayor there wants to institute a curfew. So, Sam, is that where we are? There may be no secret sauce, but these apparently are the ingredients that, elected officials are trying to address.
I'm going to talk about a conversation that I had with a community member not too long ago. There's concern among members of the community, people who are invested in anti-violence, that there's concern that their efforts are not being supported by the D.C. government. We're talking about people who are ingrained in the community, who have organic, authentic relationships with the men and the women who are on the corners, who are most closely associated with the violence, people who have been running nonprofits for many years. There are concerns among them that the city is not supporting their efforts when it comes to RFPs, when it comes to the granting process. The funds are not touching the right people who are directly connected to the members of the community. That concern to them speaks to what they describe as an effort, you know, of the D.C. government to keep crime, you know, to keep crime going, to keep it perpetuating so that the wrong people can get funded. And I'm making this point because, you know, solving violent crime is going to require families and community members to stand up and to no longer tolerate certain things that are happening in communities, and for us to come together outside of the government to some extent to take control of our young people to be more involved in their lives. Government can only do so much, but at the very same time, if government is really serious about stopping crime, they can put the resources in the right hands of people who are on the ground every day. And they've attempted to do that through the Violence Interrupted programs. But to my understanding, that's being cut back. You know, there's some danger in that being cut as well in the mayor's budget proposal. And there's also been conversation about how effective the program has been. But at the very same time, the program has not been extended beyond a few neighborhoods on east of the river. Yeah. So, you know, just to wrap up my point, there is no secret sauce in particular. It's just that authentic people with authentic relationships need to be empowered and emboldened once again to take control of their communities. That's where we're at.
Let's go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tony calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Mr. Fisher. And is Sam Ford still there also?
Yeah, Sam Ford and Sam P.K. Collins. Go right ahead.
Okay. This is my point of view here. If Americans invest money into millions of dollars into 342 cameras, why can't she utilize some of that funding for surveillance cameras? I don't care if surveillance cameras are all over the city, but I think, you know, that's one way that we can pinpoint what happened and who's responsible.
That, you know, I would say this, though. There's a lot of opposition to that from, you know, for people that are in favor of certain rights. You know what I'm saying? Because they wanted to do that when they first started this camera program, but there was a lot of opposition from the ACLU and others. I know Baltimore just did it.
Yeah.
And so they've got the cameras up there, but there was a lot of opposition here in D.C.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. One other point. I hope that, you know, someday that we can get to the point and not use the pandemic as an excuse, but this is part of the culture. This violence is the fad with this rap music and all this other kind of stuff. It's a challenge to them. And then there's no consequences. So they aren't afraid anymore.
Yeah. You know, Tony, I have to agree with you there on this program and in other, you know, forums about that. You know, there is no doubt that the COVID-19 pandemic has changed a great deal. In our communities, good and bad, and certainly, and it has had an impact on education for our young people, on families, and you know, and the whole bit. But I have said time and time again that while COVID-19 has been a problem, and there is an element of it which is in some way, shape, or form responsible for what we're seeing on the street these days, crime did not start with COVID. And there were issues in D.C. and all over this country about gun violence and and everything else, and the argument could be made that the pandemic really gave us a window into things that were just below the surface before it hit. And so, Tony, thank you so much for your point. You know, one of the other things, Sam Ford, I spoke about, you know, Baltimore's mayor, instituting or wanting to institute a curfew for young people. And I believe it was just last week that
Columbia shooting. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Columbia Mall has also instituted a curfew. If you were under the age of 18, starting at 4 o'clock on Friday, going all the way through Saturday, if you are under the age of 18, you need to be with an adult chaperone. And the county executive in Howard County has been, very, very clear. He wants you know, Columbia Mall to be a place where people can enjoy themselves and shop, but there have been incidents of, you know, fighting and other kinds of things with young people. Again, we're seeing this thing at the Baltimore Harbor. We're seeing this stuff at the National Harbor. And so, you know, that is another element that a lot of people have stopped tiptoeing around, Sam.
Yeah. Well, yeah, as I said, the thing in Baltimore, I think, and you got to correct me, I'm not real good on Baltimore, but
sure.
But there was a shooting there, as I recall, and a couple of people, young people, got shot. And, of course, that is kind of the, I don't know, the economic engine for Baltimore that doesn't have as many as D.C. has, right?
Yeah, so, that particular shooting was at a shopping center in West Baltimore off of Edmondson Avenue. But, yeah. That was.
But I thought it was at the Inner Harbor.
Yeah, there may have been the higher profile one. I think a couple of months ago was off of Edmondson Avenue. But there have been problems at at the Inner Harbor for many, many months. And you know, and I live in Baltimore, and so there, you know, and so there, I think a lot of people there are now starting to kind of scratch their heads because the problems remain the same. It's deadly gun violence, sometimes having to do with young people, sometimes not, but just a disturbance of the peace on a really, really broad scale.
So you live up there. I have a question to ask you. How does D.C. and Baltimore compare? I just don't get into Baltimore as much anymore.
That's a really long conversation. like I said, the accents are different and the food is different. But all jokes aside, it's pretty much, you know, every community has more troubles than some other parts of the community. And as we have seen in the District of Columbia, even in some of the upscale entertainment districts, no community is really immune from, you know, from problems. In Baltimore, there are problems with young people. There are problems with, you know, certainly with, you know, with gun violence. And it's still the same. And I think the mayors are, and the police chiefs and the other members of the community in Baltimore are saying some of the same things. How do we get our hands around this deadly gun violence? And these things are happening in high profile places. That we had the Stewart funeral home situation today, in a harbor shooting, recently. It's the same. It's just a different location. Yeah. Some final words on just today, from, and I'll start with you. You know, Sam Collins. Again, as I said, the thing at Stewart Funeral Home, I take personally, because it is a place where, you know, we've gone for, you know, for comfort, to be consoled. It's a black business. It's a black institution. Yeah, it's still a business, but it, you know, when you have loved ones, that's where you go to say your last goodbyes or to prepare to do that. That really, 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 really hurts. I think a lot of people, Sam Collins, feel that.
Definitely. Going back to a point I made earlier in the program, there's a disconnect between young people and elders as it relates to passing down traditions and information about institutions and how long they've been around, their prominence and their importance in the neighborhood. And young people, I'm not saying I know who the perpetrators are, but young people in general may not feel a part of the community, which speaks to why they may do things that are, you know, destroying it. Now, in terms of final thoughts, I would highly encourage DC residents to be invested in the budget. We have nearly $20 billion on the table. Revenue is dropping over the next couple of years or so. So pockets are a little tight. From my understanding, the DC Council is waiting on the Tax Commission to bring back some information that'll determine whether or not they're going to raise taxes on businesses and the wealthy this year.
But at the very same time, you know, we have until May to shape this budget. And it's incumbent upon D.C. residents to get us to get as informed as possible on aspects of the budget and to press their council members about funding certain projects. And once again, making sure that in the procurement process that the right organizations are getting funded for anti-violence activities, meaning those who are closest to the people on the ground who are affected by it.
Yeah. Sam Ford, a final thought from you about today.
Well, again, it's just that it's a concern that, you know, are things going to get any better before they get worse? It just seems to be getting worse. Now, in my opinion, it sort of follows some of these things. It's not so much the pandemic, but I know, for example, when there was a lot of protests around Black Lives Matter and, mm-hmm. and things like that, just as in Baltimore after the Freddie Gray situation, you had a big increase in violence in Baltimore, and I think some spillover here in D.C. And after the Black Lives Matter thing, I think that's probably why it's the case all over the country. And the question is, you know, we seem to have people who don't want to talk to each other. It's my way or the highway on both sides of this issue, and it seems to be, in my opinion, tearing this country apart.
Yeah. I think we can stop there. Sam Ford, Sam P.K. Collins, thank you both for your insight and it certainly your thought processes through all of this. And Sam, let me say definitely your institutional memory. We took it all the way back to Mayfair Mansions in 1988. And like you said, the more things change, the more they seem to stay the same. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Sure. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, April 11th. I'm Harold Fisher. Please be safe. Good night.